Hi, how's that water treating you?
It's good. It's from the sink in the bathroom.
Love that.
Because Elise was doing dishes and I didn't want to bother her.
That's nice of you. How is...
Stressed still. Hopefully we'll get the car back soon.
Yeah. I'm still shocked that you don't have it.
I guess it's hard to get parts because everything is still in a backlog hell of trying to get anything.
So weird.
And so there's been a part they've been missing. And so they started on the body work, and once they get that part, they'll be able to do the internal stuff, I guess.
How much internal stuff was there? I thought you were just rear-ended.
We were rear-ended badly though. We were rear-ended by a car that's four times as big as our car.
So it was electrical stuff or computerized stuff?
So one of the things that Elise said, because Elise is, since she is normally off earlier, she's been taking the calls and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that she said was that I guess the electrical parts for where the, I can't remember the name of it now, where the brake lines and stuff,
yeah,
the cradle or whatever that holds that, came undone.
Oh.
And so I'm really relieved that we called the tow truck and didn't try to drive it home.
Mm-hmm.
They told us that the car won't even turn on with that missing.
Wow.
Because it's a safety feature. The car will just turn off if that becomes dislodged, or won't be able to be turned back on again. Because I turned the car off because I didn't know the severity of anything. And they said that, we wouldn't have been able to turn the car back on anyway. So we would have had to have had it towed because of that being dislodged. Huh. So the main culprit, I think the majority of this, is that the truck that hit us had some sort of a tow hitch or something on the front of his truck.
Yeah,
and it just impaled our car.
Mm-hmm.
For a throwback to last week's episode.
Yeah.
It started from the back. If gross. Our car had a butthole.
There you go.
Welcome to the Strange and Unusual, where we discuss the strange and unusual. This is episode 121 of our series, seeking out the weird, the unexplained, and the devious from around the world. I'm Roya.
And I'm Casey.
And this is part two of our look into vampires. A group of teens inspired by a game to kill a nice couple.
I still think that just is worded funny.
Well, I mean, it might be. I don't know. If it's worded funny, give us a shout out on social media, because Roya is evidently inept at spelling.
Vampires are a group of teens inspired by a game.
I mean, these vampires are.
Yep.
If you want to talk to me about how weirdly worded my things are, you can find us over on social media. It's a great segue. We are on all the major platforms for social media, as well as patreon.com/strangeandusual. All of the details for those will be in the show notes, as well as at the end of the episode in further details and spelled correctly.
Thanks again.
I'm never going to let myself live that down.
I won't let you either.
All right. So, wee-woos. Murder. Bet you didn't see that one coming.
Nope.
Self-harm. Underage relationships, molestation allegations, animal death. I think that's it.
No diarrhea?
No diarrhea. Not that I was aware of.
Boo.
So Ruth Adams was born in West Virginia. She married a man named Joe Queen, and they had two daughters, Paula and Samantha. They moved from West Virginia to Florida, unfortunately.
Mm.
And their marriage just wasn't built to last, and the couple ended up separating and eventually divorcing. 8 years after their separation, Ruth met Rick Windorf at her job. When Ruth discovered that she was pregnant with Rick's child, the couple moved in together and started making a life for themselves. Rick's job took off, and that allowed Ruth to stop working at the company and to become a stay-at-home mom, and the couple bought 5 acres of land and began building their dream home.
Well, that's nice.
The pair spent a lot of time with their daughters, going on family trips, camping, to Disney, and out on picnics. The girls had music lessons, college funds, and even stock that Rick had purchased for them in their names.
Aww.
Rick had been married and divorced before meeting Ruth, and he worked hard to get up into the middle management at Crown, Cork, and Seal. Basically, from what I could find, it's a company that Seal's orange juice containers. Like, they do all of the sealant and safety stuff.
Okay.
He also had a very close relationship with his family, especially his brother, Billy, and took great steps to teach his daughters how to manage finances and how to play the stock market, wanting them to be able to succeed as he had. The couple would also have a second daughter together named Heather in the early 80s. Jennifer, their eldest shared daughter, was a popular cheerleader who dabbled in local beauty pageants. Their younger daughter, Heather, was more artistic and interested in alternative religions and self-expression. She believed in reincarnation, and that's important later.
Uh-oh.
And an interest in the occult, also important later. Heather seemed to thrive in this new exploration of self-expression and alternative beliefs, and she believed that, and she and Jennifer actually had a really great relationship despite being so incredibly different. She didn't ever look down on her sister's interests and didn't ever feel jealous or left out. She just didn't relate to them. She had no interest in cheerleading and couldn't really see the point in beauty pageant titles.
Yeah.
For her part in things, Ruth was actually extremely supportive of her daughter. Oh. She encouraged Heather's expression, and even as her inner differences began to be reflected in her outward appearance, as she took on more eccentric outfits and often dyed her hair bright colors.
Don't know anything about that. I've never been there.
things went well for a while until Ruth and Rick began to have issues with Jennifer as she started cutting classes and dating a 21-year-old man named Tony.
Ew.
Yeah, who she worked with at the local supermarket.
Tony, get it together. That is a child.
Jennifer started lying to her parents about her work schedule in order to sneak around and see Tony after she was banned from seeing him. Ruth even took a part-time job working at the high school in an effort to try to keep a better eye on her daughters, specifically on Jennifer. And also, like, Tony got drunk and crashed Jennifer's, like, new car, too, at one point, which was, like, a, you know...
Garbage.
How do you come back from that with parents?
Human fucking garbage. How dare. Yeah.
While much of their attention was given to Jennifer at this time, Ruth began to notice that Heather was becoming increasingly withdrawn. She also began to notice Heather taking a darker turn. It started with the decorations in her room changing to include an inverted cross on the wall, a dismembered and reassembled Barbie with a noose around her neck, and dead flowers instead of the live ones she used to decorate with.
I've never been here. I don't know what this is about.
Jennifer also caught Heather cutting herself with a razor blade on at least one occasion.
Oof.
Heather was also running up phone bills, talking to a boy named Rod Farrell.
We hate him. We already know we hate him.
Now let's talk about Roderick. Roderick Justin Farrell was born on March 28th, 1980, an Aries. Oof. Unpredictable. Excitable, spiritual, and thoughtful. Just keep some of that in mind.
No. It's Aries season. It's not Aries season.
It's not. He was born in Murray, Kentucky with his mother, Sandra Gibson, and who was born and raised in a strict Christian home. Sandra was. Mm. She felt like an outsider in her home. Her parents frowned upon everything, including makeup, movies, and dancing. A regular footloose type situation.
Where's Kevin Bacon? Save the day, man.
Sandra married Rod's father after she found out that she was pregnant, but they divorced shortly after his birth, and he was not involved with the family after that. Rod doesn't even remember his father.
Gross.
Sandra had trouble with consistent employment, and they moved around a lot. And Rod claimed that he was molested by his grandfather and his grandfather's friends.
Oh.
His mother and Aunt Lizetta, which is a great name, corroborated his story and also claimed to be victims of their father.
God, like, why? Why? Mm.
And to further insult to injury, Harold Gibson, the father, was never charged for any crimes, of course.
Get absolutely fucked, Harold.
Not Harold. Harold.
Harold?
Harold. H-A-R-R-E-L-L. Harold.
Well, you have a stupid fucking name, too, Harold.
So they eventually moved to Florida and settled into an apartment, and Rod began to attend the local high school and start making new friends. Heather and Rod met in school through a mutual love of art and fascination with the occult. However, Rod had a much darker perspective on things. According to friends, Rod claimed that he was a reincarnated demon who had been asleep for 500 years named Visago.
Visago?
Yeah. Or Visago. I think
Visago sounds better to me because it sounds like a little pissant teenager name.
asleep for 500 years before deciding to awaken and reincarnate as an American teen.
Mm-hmm. That's like, okay, real brief segue here. Why is that the thing? Why is it the thing that vampires and like demons and shit want to be American teenagers? Why? In what world does that make sense? I'm Edward Cullen. I'm going to go to high school for the next 8,000 years. No, I didn't like the 4 years I was there. I can't imagine doing it for the rest of my life. No.
I do have to admit, though, like, the U.S. would be a pretty easy country to just make people disappear and no one would look for them. So, I mean, there's that going for it, at least.
It's like, and then you're like,
people type vampire.
And then you're like 100 years old, you're a vampire going to high school, dating high schoolers?
Gross.
No, I don't think so. That, no.
I'm looking at you, Spike and Angel.
Yeah, for real. Buffy is not an exception. She's the rule.
He would claim that he had memories of his different incarnations and told Heather that she was also a reincarnated demon and prophet.
Nah, dog, don't you dare.
Rod became romantically involved with Heather's best friend, Janine, who lived about 20 minutes away. Heather and Janine would talk on the phone and dissect all of his bizarre claims of being immortal, and it just fascinated them. He also claimed that Janine was a reincarnated ancient queen.
Girl.
He would tell them stories about life in the 1500s as a French aristocrat and introduce them to vampirism. Janine described him as cutting himself at an altar in his bedroom and having her drink his blood. His mother would then move them back to Murray, Kentucky, and he continued his relationship with both Janine and Heather over the phone. Although I can't really find anything that there was any romantic relationship with Heather. Seems like they were just friends.
Okay.
While attending high school back in Murray, Rod met Jaden Stephen Murphy. Jaden also enjoyed dressing in dark clothes and was known in the school for having an interest in the occult and vampiric beliefs. The two were encouraged to meet with the expectation that they would actually get in a fight.
Oh.
However, Jaden approached Rod and the two found common ground and opted to be friends instead. Jaden was also the head of a group of LARPers who enjoyed playing Vampire the Masquerade.
Never heard of her.
Ah, scary.
Oh, I remember this episode of Forensic Files. They showed the pictures of the cards, not the book.
Uh-huh. I've also seen an episode of something. I want to say it was Occult Crimes, and they just had a bunch of the books splayed out, mm-hmm. like an old school, like 90s goth kids wallpaper on their computer.
It was Dungeons and Dragons.
The group even engaged in real vampiric experiences, including consensual bloodletting. In the documentary, Kentucky Teenage Vampires, Murphy and some of the members of his group talked about the beliefs that they actually had. They said that while they crave blood, they respect life and would never kill animals or humans for that blood.
That's nice of them.
It does need to be clearly noted that Jaden Murphy and his group were not connected to the later crimes that would happen. They were merely a catalyst that would begin a dark interest.
Mm.
Or further exacerbate a dark interest.
Ugh.
In January of 1996, Jaden approached Rod, inviting him to cross over, which is basically an initiation into the vampire world. They met at a local cemetery and cut themselves and drank each other's blood. Months went by, and Jaden started to notice that Rod's behavior was becoming more erratic, and Jaden started distancing himself after seeing Rod kill a cat. During an interview, Rod recalled that he and Jaden were outside to talk, and a kitten approached and scratched him, and he became enraged and killed the kitten.
No!
That's important later. In November 1996, puppies were found mutilated behind the Humane Society in Murray, and Rod was brought in for questioning but denied any involvement.
I don't like him.
Rod had been planning on leaving Murray for close to 6 months at this point, missing Janine and Heather and hating his chaotic home life.
Yeah, I can't blame him there.
He had also started to abuse drugs, taking PCP, LSD, and heroin, and his mother described him as being violent under the influence. Gee, I wonder why. That's kind of what PCP does to you.
Yeah.
However, his friends would say that his mother was just as violent towards him.
Oh.
Friends recalled Sandra grabbing Rod by his hair and trashing his room while berating him and saying that he ruined her life. Rod claimed that she was upset because she wanted to join the cult and be crossed over into being a vampire and they wouldn't let her.
Right.
In May of 1996, he was suspended for skipping school, smoking on campus, and disruptive behavior. And Sandra filed a report on her son claiming that he was beyond parental control and that Rod was verbally abusive, had threatened to kill her, cut himself, and was involved with a satanic cult.
Oh boy. Things That's a lot to take in.
Yeah. Things finally reached a... Things finally reached a breaking point between Jaden and Rod when they had a physical altercation in September of 1996. They described it in an interview as Rod threatening him, and then Jaden grabbed him and slammed him against a wall. Jaden served 6 months in jail for assault.
Wow.
The story began to unravel even further when Sandra was charged with soliciting rape and soliciting sodomy on November 12th, 1996.
Soliciting rape?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
It means that she was sending sexually explicit letters to Jaden's 14-year-old brother, Jamie, talking about how much she wanted to bone him.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. Their mother, Jamie and Jaden's mother, obviously pressed charges after Jamie showed her the letters.
Yeah.
And the letters actually confirm Rod's claims that his mother wanted to become a vampire as well.
Weird.
So he wasn't lying about that.
Super duper fucking weird.
As a result, kind of from this and from being put in jail for 6 months, Jaden booted Rod from the group. And Rod just went on to find his own. And this group included Howard Scott Anderson, 16, Dana Cooper, 19, and his girlfriend, Charity Kesey, 16. On November 24th, 1996, they set their plan in motion. Escape Murray. They went back to Florida to reconnect with Heather and Janine and met up with Heather in a local cemetery and crossed her over to be part of their little vampire cult.
Their little vampire cult. Love that.
The plan was to get Janine and Heather in Howard's Buick and leave. However, when they got a flat tire, the plans changed to stealing Heather's parents' car.
Oh, just a light Grand Theft Auto.
Both Heather's boyfriend and Rod's girlfriend, Janine, showed no interest in leaving with this group, and Heather's boyfriend broke up with her when she refused to rethink about leaving with Rod. Because he just had always had a bad feeling about this, was just kind of like placating her vampire stuff, just being like, yeah, she's a goth kid, like, goth kids be gothin', you know, like, what are you gonna do? So after leaving their significant other's houses, or ex-significant other's houses, they moved on to Heather's house to steal her parents' car. Based on all accounts of the perpetrators, Rod and Howard entered the Windorf home through the garage, and Rod picked up a crowbar as he went. They found Rick, Heather's father, asleep on the sofa in the living room, and Rod lifted the crowbar and beat Rick in the head and chest with it. After that attack, Rod went into the kitchen, where he came face to face with Heather's mother, Ruth. She demanded to know what he was doing there and what he wanted, and when he approached, she threw a hot cup of coffee in his face and scratched him.
Good for her.
Rod claimed that he did not go into the house intending to hurt Ruth, but when she scratched him, he lost it and beat her to death with the crowbar.
Look, the man killed a kitten.
For doing the same thing. For scratching him.
We know what he was gonna do.
After, he stated that Howard just stood to the side and watched as Rod killed Heather's parents. After the murders were committed, Rod took Rick's Discover card and the couple's car to meet up with the rest of their little clan. Everyone agreed, in the trial and everything later, that Heather was not told that her parents had been murdered at this time.
Mm.
She had no idea that Rod was going to hurt them. Jennifer, Heather's sister, returned home to find her parents murdered and her sister missing.
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, there it is. She would also find a goodbye note from Heather, addressed to her parents and her sister as well. Further indication that she had no idea that anyone was going to hurt her parents. Right. She left that note with the intention of them finding it in her room. The group went on the run and made it to Louisiana before they ran out of money. Charity Kesey called her mother in South Dakota. Her mother actually worked for the local sheriff's department, so I don't know that that was such a good idea on Kesey's part, unless part of this was like, please help me, we're in over our heads, you know, like, which I can also kind of see.
Yeah.
Charity's mother saw the story about the Windorf murders, and after she spoke to Charity, she informed the authorities.
Good.
She agreed to wire the money to a Howard Johnson outside of Baton Rouge and let the police know where they could be there when the teens arrive.
There you go. Yeah. Go, Mom.
The group was taken into custody, and Rod confessed to the murders in vivid detail.
Oh, God, no.
The other members talked to the detectives about their involvement in the murders, and they all agreed that Howard was the only one in the house with Rod during the actual murders. At the autopsy, it was determined that Rick had a total of 22 wounds, resulting in skull fractures and brain lacerations.
Jesus.
He also had a deep wound on the right side of his chest and was marked with a symbol that looked like the letter V.
It's not funny. It's not funny, but this kid is so fucking stupid.
Yeah. Vasejo.
Okay.
As Ruth had not been taken by surprise in her sleep like Rick had, she had many defensive wounds, and skin samples were taken from under her nails. She had 23 wounds in total, 16 of which were focused on her head, and the skin samples found under her nails matched Rod's DNA. There was also a shoe print found near Ruth's body that matched Rod's boots. The police immediately suspected that there was a conspiracy between Rod and Heather. However, the members of the group were adamant that Heather had no idea that Rod was going to kill her parents. She thought they were just going to steal the car and leave.
Yep.
Three people actually claimed to have overheard Heather talking about wanting her parents dead.
Oh, well, shit. So
the first was Amber Blood. Kind of a funny name, given the circumstances of the case.
Yes, kind of hilarious.
A 15-year-old who claimed to be a friend of Heather's and she knew that Heather was involved with the murders. However, Amber failed the polygraph, and when faced with the fact that she failed the polygraph, said, "Actually, I don't know who Heather is."
What?
Yep, just a clout chaser. Second was Brandy Gonkzy.
Okay.
Who was 14, and she claimed to know Heather's ex. She claimed that Heather had called. She claimed that he told her that Heather called him, basically, and told him that Heather had found a couple of men from out of state that she had hired to kill her parents. With what money? Who knows? However, her ex-boyfriend stated, with no question and no reason really to protect Heather at this point, that there was never a call or conversation with him about that at all that had ever happened.
That whole scenario reminds me of that scene from Ferris Bueller where he's trying to figure out the teacher is trying to he's like, "Where's Ferris Bueller?" or whatever, and the girl's like, "My cousin's boyfriend, second."
Oh, you know, yeah,
whatever. Like, this is what that reminded me of. I was like, damn, that's literally all I can think of now. Her ex-boyfriend's friend's brother's teacher or whatever.
Isn't there one, is it Spaceballs, where it's like your brother's sister's cousin's ex-high school or college roommate? Oh, gosh,
I don't
like
Spaceballs was not one that I was like super into, so I think I saw it once and never again. Give me Young Frankenstein any day. Producers. Solid. Spaceballs is okay. Not my favorite.
The third person who actually tried to say that Heather had had a conversation about wanting to kill her parents was Sandra.
I was going to say it was the mom.
Rod's mother, who claimed that she overheard Heather asking Rod to kill her parents.
Uh-huh. Likely story, bitch.
Sandra also failed a polygraph and then recanted.
And then went, "Who's Heather?"
I don't remember a Heather. I only remember Vasaja. So ultimately, a grand jury decided not to indict Heather, and she was eventually released. And she spent a lot of her time being very much ostracized from her living family.
Yeah.
Her sister was forbidden from communicating with her, with the family that took her sister in, the part of the family that took Jennifer in. And then, like, Heather's, like, grandma tried to shoot her. And then she got in. Yeah, like, basically people in the family still blamed Heather for the crimes, even though Heather had no idea that the crimes were going to happen. But it seems like she got her kind of life back on track later on and got married and settled down and has kind of
put that
realized. Yeah, and realized that, like, Rod was just really charismatic and really easy to just fall for what he was saying because he said it with such conviction.
That's how cults work, man.
Yeah. So everyone that was involved pleaded guilty. And even though they pleaded guilty, all of the evidence against Rod was actually presented to a jury. So Dana Cooper received 17 and a half years. He was the only one who was not a minor at the time. Charity Kesey received 10 and a half years. Howard Scott Anderson received life without parole.
Dang.
Rod Farrell received a death sentence, which was later reduced to life, given that the crimes happened when he was a minor.
Mm-hmm.
The court went in and reevaluated it. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, it is weird when they're like kids and you're like, if you're trying to argue that a young person can't decide what gender they are when they're that young, like, how can you then argue? But they definitely had the brain capacity to, like, understand what they were doing with a murder. Like, I think the fucked up thing is, if you want to argue one thing, you can't have it both ways. And I think that's what our system is trying to do right now.
Well, and the thing is that I 100% believe that from the age of, I would say, probably 5 or 6, you should have a pretty good understanding of you don't hurt people.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, you don't do that. It is not a good thing to do. And so we're getting into a conversation of, like, you know, could he be culpable for the crimes? Yes. But at what point do you try somebody as an adult versus a child? How severe do the crimes or well planned do the crimes need to be? Because ultimately, from everything that I read, there was no reason for Rod to have done this. Ruth was actually in the shower when they got there and Rick was asleep.
Right.
All they had to do was go in, get a set of keys, open the garage door, and leave.
Now, yes. So you have the you learn that you should not hurt people when you're 5, and then also he's been molested and abused his entire life. So hurting and being hurt is a part of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly. So where is that disconnect, and where do we put that in his hearing?
Yeah, because it's also that conversation of nature versus nurture gets you to a certain point. Yep. Because, you know, to again bring up, you know, a conversation that I've had several times on here, I feel like, you know, my mom was also a victim of molestation and of abuse, and you, aside from absolute self-defense of her children, that's the only way she would have ever hurt another person.
Yeah.
Ever. And then you have, you know, one of my uncles who was born in the same family, went through a lot of the same circumstances, not necessarily all of them. I don't have confirmation, but and he was continued the cycle of abuse with his kids. Physical abuse, obviously, not anything else. But you know, and it still goes to show, like, how even two people who have the same circumstances, literally, same family,
yep,
only a few years apart age-wise, the only real difference is girl versus boy in the family.
And then you consider things like, was there a teacher or an outside influence that colored the perspective of how that works for them? And when, where was that difference? You know, like, who wasn't there for one that was there for the other?
Yeah.
Outside of the family unit.
I think in mom's circumstance, I mean, mom was there for her and her younger siblings.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big part of why they made it out as well as they did.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just, it's an interesting conversation, I think, that comes up with situations like this, where obviously, you know, Rod Farrell had a lot of terrible things happen to him. I'm not arguing that at all. But at what point, you know, does that stop being an excuse for mistreatment or causing issues, causing problems, misbehavior, things like that? And I think that the very big line in the sand is hurting people.
Right. So, no, and what I was trying to say is that, like, the people who support the death penalty and are, like, super anti this whole satanic panic thing are the same ones who are arguing that, you know, a child can't make up their mind about who they are, but they are definitely okay with putting them on fucking death row, or, like, yeah, you can't get an abortion, but we will kill this child for murder. Like,
yeah,
it's the details are so fucking backwards in this sort of situation. Like, I agree that he was a piece of shit and deserves life in prison, but the idea that he was even on death row, or, like, even up for the death penalty is fucking bizarre.
And I think that there are two big factors in that. I think one of the factors is that it was the 90s, even though it was late 90s. And I think that there is something in people's brains, which I think is completely wrong, that says 15 is a child, 16 is an adult.
Is an adult, yep.
And for some reason, I think it has to do with, like, you can get jobs when you're 16 or something like that. Like, you can take on that additional responsibility. Some places have jobs that you can start at, like, 13 or something like that. Like,
I think I started working at 14.
We've got a little amusement park, and they will let people work at, like, 12 or 13. But it's, like, just open in the summer. And it's just open on, like, Friday and Saturday nights. For, gotcha, like, 4 hours. Like, it's not, like, you know,
yeah,
Disneyland or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I started working at probably 12 or 13 at my dad's pizza place.
I was gonna say, but, and you your family owned businesses, which is,
yeah,
which is also different. Like, families will make their kids like Bob's Burgers. Like,
yeah. But I got, unlike Bob's Burgers, I got paid.
Yeah.
Because even little 13-year-old me is not working for free. But anyway, yeah, it's an interesting conversation to have about, like, and what severity of the crimes.
Right.
Like, is there a point where you're just like, oh, wow, you just straight up, like Columbine, as an example.
Yeah.
You know, like, if they had not taken their lives at the end of that, you know, like, I feel like there's a line. I feel like there's a point where, because I'm pro the death penalty in very select circumstances where there is irrefutable evidence that the person is guilty and their crimes are just atrocious. Like, there's no chance for them to be reintegrated into society and repaired.
Right.
And I still think that life in prison is sufficient in those circumstances. People like Charles Manson, people like Richard Ramirez, people like, you know, Ted Bundy, like, to just throw out some of the big ones here, mm-hmm, you know, like, there's no fixing those guys.
Yeah, but Manson got life because they overturned.
Yeah, because it's California.
Yeah. And then, well, did Ramirez?
I think Ramirez got the death penalty before it was like when they had it, I think, or he got murdered in prison.
I was going to say, I think he was killed before that was even an issue. Like, that's what Dahmer was definitely killed in prison. I remember
Dahmer
that
was killed in prison, yeah. And then Ted Bundy was electrocuted.
Friday. I just remember that sign. Hey, Ted, next Tuesday is Friday.
But for a little bit of a rounding out of this conversation in this episode, so in 2018, Howard Scott Anderson's sentence was reduced to 40 years with credit for 22 served. Oh. So he'll be eligible for parole in 2031.
How old will he be?
I don't know. I didn't do that.
Oh, okay. He'll be old?
Yeah, I mean, he was 16 in 96.
Okay, yeah. So he'll be 50s or 60s?
Yeah, I think around in there. Not then, fucking math, man.
Okay.
Not good at it. So Charity was released in March of 2006, and Dana was released in October of 2011. and Rod's last bid to have his sentence reduced from life to something like what Howard Scott Anderson got was denied in 2020. And that was his last opportunity to appeal the sentence.
Oh, dang. Yeah, I think you said 2032 for Howard?
31, yeah.
31. So he'll be 51.
Which, I mean, that's one of those things where I'm like, I can understand why he would have a more severe punishment because he was there.
Right.
And didn't do anything about it. But, like, what are you expecting, like, a 16-year-old to do?
If you just watched a dude kill somebody and you're 16 years old and he's going for it, I'm gonna be like,
I'm next.
How do I survive?
Yeah, if I do anything, if I say anything, if he's capable of this with this guy who was just asleep.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, I would also immediately leave and call the police.
Yeah, but,
and
like,
I don't even like the cops.
But that's not you necessarily at 16. Where you have venerated this person as your leader.
I mean,
too. You know, like, you gotta remember that cult mentality.
I'm not
saying right or wrong. I think I would have called the police too, but I wouldn't have done anything to intervene there.
Yeah.
Because that's how you die. That's how you become a third victim in that house.
Yep.
You know? Like, and so,
I don't know. I was also a little shit at 16. I might have just, like, punched that dude.
Yeah, you were in a punk band. I was.
I might have just laid that dude out. Who knows?
And then just skanked over him.
I could see it. Yep. That would have happened. That's exactly what would have gone down.
But that is punk.
Fuck off.
But that is the story of Rod Farrell, and he evidently he's been very, very, a lot of people feel it's very sincere, sincerely apologetic to the victims' families and everything the entire time. It wasn't a situation where he like was like, ooh, yeah, sorry about that later in life. He was pretty apologetic from the very beginning about everything that happened. He and Jaden maintained a friendship for a long time, like over calls and letters and stuff. But eventually Jaden pulled away due to religious differences. I don't know on whose part. That's all I could find.
Was Rod the one that got like super Jesus-y in jail?
I think so.
Yeah, I would back off too.
And then his mom, Sandra, has said that he's been very popular with women, like a lot of murderers, and that he's been married twice.
Ew.
And like has another girlfriend now, like after the second divorce or whatever. So I guess life's going pretty okay for Rod Farrell. Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah, I don't get it.
It's not sexy.
He's misunderstood. I can fix him.
I mean, we literally talked about that last week with the fucking vampire thing. Like, they're now this misunderstood hero, and maybe that's a part of it. Like, he's a monster, but he's good to me.
Yeah, it's like to be fair, like, the Beast from Beauty and the Beast really fucked with my expectations of romance.
Yes.
I think.
First of all, for I was a kid, I thought that was the most romantic shit ever. And then I was blindsided when I was told that was Stockholm Syndrome.
I remember, and I saw a TikTok about this too, that was like, were any other children like that
really
were really
when he transformed?
Yeah, were yes, really upset absolutely. When he just transformed into white guy, like just like, yeah, his hair looks nice or whatever, but where's my giant buffalo monster?
We actually had a conversation the other day about Barbies and like playing Barbies as a kid. Uh-huh. And like I never used a Ken, like I had Ken and he was there, you know, but all of my Barbies had a relationship with, you ready for this?
Yeah.
The Disney Aladdin doll. All of my Barbies were in a interracial relationship with
an interracial polygamous relationship.
No, they were separate time.
Oh, okay. You weren't there yet.
He'd gone through all of them.
Yeah. I had a puppet Beast, like a plastic. Oh, hell yeah.
The plastic one?
Yeah, I have that one, and I have Belle, and I still have them to this day.
Oh, Jesus. I had that plastic fucking puppet. I remember it.
And, yeah, so a lot of my Barbies were romantically involved with the Beast.
I did not have a Beast doll. I did have Aladdin, and I had Jasmine, and they were very important to me.
I actually never got a Jasmine doll, and I don't know why I didn't. I got an Esmeralda doll, though. I have a Jasmine Barbie now that I love because she's actually got like a like Roman a nose. Oh, no, yeah. She's got like a strong. Yeah, she's got a different profile than other Barbies. She doesn't have like the scooped in like white person nose. She's got a strong nose.
I think that was part of it. Was like they were made by Disney through Mattel, so they looked like the characters from the cartoons.
Yeah,
I remember having them, and I had Pocahontas for sure because I was obsessed, and then I had an Ariel, and I remember because I think I cut off all of her red hair.
I had Mulan, and I had Esmeralda. Those were the two I can't remember
if I had an.
Loved my Esmeralda doll,
but actually,
she got the most attention. She had the most boyfriends and girlfriends. Yeah, for sure.
That was how the topic came up because Sandy and I were talking about Ken and how Ryan Gosling's hair is so like blonde in the new movie.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, I don't remember Ken's hair being that blonde. And so we started talking about our Ken dolls, and she said that she had used, what's the fucking guy's name that Esmeralda ends up with?
Oh, excuse me, I don't remember.
Night guy, him.
Yeah,
that was who she used. And I was like, oh, I have all of my
John Johnson.
Yeah. All of my Barbies, when I would play, the boyfriend was always Aladdin because he was just the hot.
Yeah.
Period. And I maintain that to this day, that is where my racism ended.
Anyway.
That's not true. I grew up in rural Pennsylvania, and I've got a lot to atone for.
Anyway, we got a lot of Barbie talk at the end of this episode.
We did. I hope everybody enjoyed that. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. We talked about Barbies and also this real vampire crime, in quotes. We hope that you'll reach out to us with your own experiences. We want your stories, your questions, and your feedback. So just send us an email at strangeunusualpodcast@gmail.com. If you are sending a story, we ask that you put listener story in the subject line so that we can sort through this a little more easily. What Barbie did you play with?
I was going to say, what was your favorite doll?
What was your favorite Barbie?
Did Beast awaken some sort of strange dark fantasy within you that
absolutely
now
yes.
Forces you to find weird romance novels involving beastmen?
Look, don't at anybody.
I'm not yucking anybody's yum because I would have to be involved in that. Yucking.
Like the whole, the Shape of Water, like that whole Abe Sapien fantasy right there.
Uh-huh.
Yes, also, have you been involved in any vampire crimes?
Or have you been in any vampire cults?
Yes.
Do you know anybody who is part of Jaden Murphy's vampire little group? That would be cool to hear
about. His
little
group?
Well, I mean, he had the group of LARPers. He had the group of, like, cool people.
And do you play Vampire the Masquerade? We want to know.
Yeah. What's your favorite clan? At us on social media and tell us what your favorite clan is.
So, that's it for me. It's your part.
Yeah, I know. Speaking of social media, you can also find us on Instagram at strange_unusual_podcasts or our personal accounts Roya Rampage and Calamity Casey. You can find us on Twitter at _strangeunusual, at Calamity Casey, and at Roya Rampage. We're also on Facebook. Just search for the Strange and Unusual podcast. If you'd like, you can join us over on Patreon at patreon.com/strangeunusual. We have bonus episodes. We have roundabouts monthly polls that we put up. We have access to our Discord. We have one tier that you can just basically tell us what you want us to cover with like two exceptions, and we'll do it. But we understand right now with times as they are and inflation what it be that money is an object now.
It certainly is.
And that if you cannot afford to financially support us, we totally get it, 100%. But if you can, just like, share, subscribe, rate, review, give us downloads, you know, put us on your list to be downloaded every time a new episode comes out, engage with us on social media, different things like that. Like, add us if you find an interesting case or an interesting story that you think we should cover, we should talk about and look into. Let us know, because we're always looking for new content to cover. I mean, in all honesty, a couple of our last episodes have been cases that I heard about on TikTok. or through YouTube videos that Casey's watched, you know, different things like that. So let us know.
Yeah. And if you are interested in me doing a New England panic of vampires, we could certainly do supernatural New England shit episode.
Oh, fuck yeah, we could. I mean, we still have to do the witch trials. Yeah, that'll be a two-parter.
Yep.
At least, if not three. So you got, like, what led up to the trials, and then all of the ghosts. But anyway.
Witchfinder General, man. Yeah.
Bye.
We are so good at ending these episodes.